There should be plenty of extra copies, and if we need to, from week to week, make a few extra copies. We'll probably put a few extra ones out next week. Anybody need extra copy? We're going to leave some on the back table. In just a minute, we're going to explain what we're going to do with these. Okay, so we recently finished out a study of Bible ethics. We had talked about biblical morality. How do we define it? How do we know what it is? What's our reference point for being moral and ethical? Where do we understand the precepts and the principles that help to make us moral? How do we discern issues that aren't specifically mentioned in the Bible, but we know that we're supposed to have some sort of a stand on it? How do we do that? And then we individually addressed topics. We talked about everything from serving in the military until, you know, we finished at the end talking about drug abuse, drug addiction, things of that sort. And so we covered a broad range of topics, and we started putting out feelers a couple of weeks ago, I guess about a month or two ago, and said, if you have any suggestions for a new class, what would you like to study? And we had a couple of really, really good suggestions. In fact, two excellent suggestions, and so we're going to basically take them in the order in which they were submitted. First of all, we had a question, but I think it can be a great study beyond just the scope of the question that was submitted, but it was essentially about the grace of God. And so what we're going to do is take initially what was, you know, a question, and we're going to expand that, and we're just going to study grace. We'll spend some weeks studying the grace of God. So that's where we're going to be for a while. And here's the way we want to do this. There's a sheet out tonight. This is not the sheet that we are discussing tonight. This is the sheet we're going to discuss next week. What that gives you a chance to do is it gives you a chance to take this home, look up the scriptures that are involved, think through it. If you have any notes, you know, write them down. And then when we come to class next week and we talk about this subject, and we're hopefully next week we're going to be talking about the depths of sin. There's a reason why we want to do that in relation to the grace of God. Go through, look at the passages, read the chapter, read some of the verses, make some notes if you have some input next week in class, and hopefully we can all come back. Everybody's jotted some notes down, and we can run through these questions, and hopefully we can have some excellent discussion because you'll have had time to look up the scriptures, think about it, maybe put down some of your musings on the paper, and then we'll talk about it next week. And this will be our first real installment on the study of grace next week. All we're doing tonight is introducing the subject. So hopefully that's what we're going to do. Each week we'll have a sheet of paper out, and the sheet of paper will be for next week's discussion questions. So next week we're going to be talking about, in relation to the grace of God, sin and the consequences of sin, and why is it important to understand that? What does that do for us in relation to the grace of God? So that's what we're going to talk about next week. So there's a bunch of scriptures and some questions. And if you think of something that we didn't cover that kind of fits the subject, think about it, and we'll discuss it next week. So hopefully that's going to generate a little bit more discussion, and you'll have time to really think about the answers to the questions and some things that maybe wouldn't normally think of on the spur of the moment. So that's what we're going to do. Secondarily, once we finish our study of grace, we've got, some weeks and a lot of different areas of discussion in grace. We want to really dive in and discuss it good. After that, we're going to do a study of the apostleship. Why study the apostleship? What's so important about those men? What do we know about the men? There are some of those men that we don't really know a whole lot about. Have you ever thought about what became of Bartholomew and some of those guys? We don't really know a whole lot about them. We have maybe an occasional mention here or there of some of those folks. historically. Maybe there's some things written about them that may kind of fill in the blanks about where they went post-Pentecost and things like that. Some of them we know a whole lot about: Paul, Peter, James, John, some of the others. So we want to take an in-depth look at the apostles. So we're going to do a study, hopefully a very, very good study of the apostleship. So once we finish a study of grace, we'll be looking at the apostles. So that gives us a kind of a header on where we are going. But tonight, let's introduce the subject of the grace of God. And again, there's no notes for tonight. This is just sort of an open discussion. We've got a few verses to sort of fill in and sort of give us a framework, sort of a navigational beacon where we're going in our study. So let's begin with this this question tonight. Let's start with this one. Why is it important to study the grace of God? If somebody said, okay, you're studying grace, why is that so important? What would you say? Okay, so okay, in just a second, we're gonna follow that up with the fact that it is misrepresented. Is it misrepresented? It is. What are some of those misrepresentations? So we're gonna put that on a shelf in just a second. We're gonna ask. Joel said it. A lot of misrepresentations. What are some of those? So number one, it's been greatly misrepresented. Why else? What's so important about studying the grace of God? What's so important about it? Okay. So obviously it's something to be received. We're going to, hopefully one of the parts of the study is going to be about, you know, is there anything man must do to receive the benefits of the grace of God? So there's, you know, in advance we know there is something. So there, in order to receive it, there's something we have to do. So in order to do that, we've got to understand grace. Anything else that you can think of? Yeah, Ken?
I think a better way to understand.
Absolutely. Yeah, so if we're going to start defining it in just a minute. We're going to put some definitions to it. But if we really want to understand God, then understanding the things that He grants us or the way in which He grants it to us really gives us insight into God Himself. So we want to study it because it's something to be received. We want to receive it the right way. We want to understand what it is we're receiving. It gives us insight into God. There's a lot of misrepresentation. Anything else that you can think of on why it's so important to study the grace of God? What is it? We're saved by the grace of God. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 5. Hebrews chapter 5. I think all of the answers are correct. There's no wrong answer. All of those are correct. Lots and lots of reasons to study the grace of God. Hebrews 5. Let us go to verse 7, right in there. I hate to break into the middle of a discussion. He's been doing it since about verse 5, about Jesus being a priest after the order of Melchizedek, and he's comparing and contrasting that. It gets down to verse 7, says, who in the days of his flesh, that's Jesus, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with vehement cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death and was heard because of his godly fear. And by the way, without chasing a rabbit, what does verse 7 tell us? Do we get any insight at all into the mind of Christ on the eve of his betrayal and crucifixion? What was going through his mind? Yeah. Do you get from this that perhaps he was scared? He was very scared. I mean, and it says in verse 7, vehement cries and tears to him who was able to save him. When he's praying, you know, if there's any other way, let this cup pass from me. Was he serious about that? He was deadly serious about that. I mean, it's just he really wanted the Father to devise from the human perspective some other way for this to be accomplished. And yet, from the divine perspective, what did he realize? There was no other way that was going to be accomplished. I love verse 7, just an amazing verse. And then it says, though he was a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. And having been perfected, he became the author of eternal salvation to all who obey him. What's that mean, that he became the author of eternal salvation? There may be several things here, but what's that mean?
He's
Okay, through his suffering, for, you know, first one to do it. You know, there's even a statement in Hebrews, I think it's the next chapter, about how he has sort of led the way into heaven for us. You know, he's the forerunner who went before us and led the way into heaven. What's it mean? Anything else? Okay. Obviously, yeah, there's a little bit more to come. They kind of get in the idea of the first fruits there. The author of salvation, does it mean that he is in charge of salvation? Comes from him, he's in charge of salvation, he authors it, and we are disciples of Jesus Christ. Acts 11, verse 26, we're Christians, but we're also disciples of Jesus Christ, and we're followers. And I guess the question then becomes, if we are followers of Him, and He is the one granting us salvation, the question becomes, why follow Him? Why do that? So it ultimately boils down to this question of whether we see ourselves in need of what He's offering, or whether we, like many people in the world, think they're just basically doing it their own selves. It becomes this question of whether we believe ourselves to be dependent upon Him for everything or independent. And that's where the question of grace comes in, because do I really need God to save me? Do I need Him to do that? Or is that something I can just do all by myself and don't really need Him for? And that's where the subject of grace comes in. It's why it becomes such an important thing. Because ultimately, I think we can go ahead and admit, we, in and of ourselves, can we save ourselves? It's impossible. We cannot do it in and of ourselves. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't something we can do, like Travis was talking about, but in and of ourselves, by ourselves, there's nothing. And God has taken His grace, which we're going to define in just a minute, and He's put it in Christ. Galatians 3, 26 and 27, 2 Timothy 2, 1, a number of passages. And so if we want to connect with that, and we know we need it, then we've got to understand it. It kind of goes with what Ken was talking about. To understand God, to know Him better, we got to really understand grace. So it's a very, very, very important study. It's something that we want to know it inside and out. We want to know it as well as it can be known from what is revealed in Scripture. Now, this gets to what Joel was talking about. Are there misconceptions about grace? Okay, what are some of those misconceptions? Okay, one is that's all you need. You may have heard someone say, "We are saved by grace alone." Have you ever heard someone say that? I mean, it's in books. People say it. You know, flip through the channels on a Sunday morning. There's a televangelist on there. It's man-made religion. They may say something like to the effect of salvation by grace only, and they mean that the grace of God alone, it's the only element involved in salvation. Are there any other misconceptions you can think of related to grace? Yeah, Travis. Yeah, I think, and I think we, as a culture, in the religious mind, it's sort of trending that way a lot more today. Where, you know, God is sort of seen as the all-loving God, which He is, but somehow that sort of excuses it, just takes away wrongdoing. And there are a lot of folks today who, if they're involved in something wrong and they're challenged on it, they'll say, but God is gracious and God is loving and He's kind and He's full of grace. And what do they mean by that? Yeah, He's just sort of letting me run wild with sin because He's a gracious God, and that's what grace does, Steve.
Yeah. Same as instead of obeying the gospel, just accept Jesus.
Yes.
And that's the same way with grace.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of folks think that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's not, and what, you know, what Travis was talking about is not something that just applies here and now. That's just sort of the ultimate application. The ultimate end of that is to take that to judgment, it is to say in judgment, how could God can't, he would never condemn anybody because he's so gracious and so full of grace. And he is, but that's really a misunderstanding of grace to think that God turns a blind eye to sin, because that's not what grace does. Grace doesn't do that. So there's a ton of misconception and misunderstanding about grace. Any others that you can think of? Yeah, Tommy? Okay, yeah, that's a part of that idea that the grace of God is so powerful and so omnipotent that if you're saved solely by it, you can't be lost, because otherwise it would be some sort of an attack on the strength of the grace of God, and that can't be the case. So yeah, I think that's a follow up to that for sure. So any other misconceptions you can think of, Art? That's right. Yeah. Yeah, so we've talked some about Calvinism. So I think in some of the points of Calvinism, there's that idea that grace sort of overwhelms and takes over, and it's just all grace and nothing else. Dear. Yeah. Yeah, That's right, and I think that's Art kind of getting that. This idea of unconditional election is about giving the grace of God to certain people, but not to everybody. And regardless of what they believe or think or do, they're saved because they're part of the group that God selected before the world began. So he's... Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. It didn't. It was totally independent of what your choice was. Even if you had some sort of a feigned obedience, if he didn't name you before the beginning of the world, it didn't count. So, yeah, he did believe that. So obviously, tons of misconception, and we sure don't want anybody to misunderstand the beautiful subject of grace. So that's one of the reasons we want to study. It goes back to what Joel was talking about. We want to help people understand grace, and really. Can you appreciate grace in its fullness if you don't understand it correctly? You can't really understand it. Now, you may have some slight appreciation for it, but if it's some warped view of it, it's never going to be the fullest appreciation of it like it needs to be. So we want to know it inside and out so that we deeply appreciate the grace of God the way it's supposed to be appreciated, Terry. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Let's turn to Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians 2. So let's spend the remaining part of our class defining grace. And Ephesians 2 is probably a great place to start and stop that definition. It's just a wonderful chapter, at least the first 13 or so verses that are essentially dealing with the subject. Now, it may be only listed once or twice, the actual word, but the subject of grace is really treated often here. And so it's sort of a great introduction to our study of grace. And it kind of starts us off where we're going to begin next week about, are there consequences for wrongdoing? What are some of those consequences? What does it mean to be in sin? What does all of that mean? And why is it so necessary to understand all of that? What does that do about our view of grace to understand that? So that's what we're going to talk about next week. So before we start throwing out some definitions of grace, one of the words that sometimes comes up that gets used interchangeably with grace is mercy. And people say, grace and mercy, or mercy and grace, or sometimes in lieu of the word grace, people will say mercy. Is there a difference between those two words? And if so, even though it might be subtle, what's the difference between those two? For example, let's just go ahead and put on the board that grace essentially is giving what we don't deserve. We'll talk about that a little bit more in just a second. What would be an example of giving something, what kind of gift that we don't deserve is something that God gives? What would be a gift that He gives us? heaven, life. Anything else?
Salvation.
All right, so let's just put forgiveness. That forgiveness is something that God gives. Is that correct? All right, so He gives us forgiveness when we abide by His conditions, when we do that, meet the conditions of pardon. That's something He gives us. So grace is the giving of something, an actual gift that we don't deserve. Again, we're going to do a little bit more on the definition part in just a minute. But what is mercy? Is it a little shade different than grace is the way it's used? What is that exactly? Oh, okay, not getting something that we deserve. And I think that's probably a pretty good definition of that. Withholding what we deserve, we're actually deserve something. That's kind of where we're going next week to get us into that lesson. What would be an example of withholding something that we deserve? What is it? Death, would you say, Terry? Yeah, condemnation. Any other thoughts on that? I think both of those kind of fit in that idea. And then the idea would be condemnatory judgments, being sentenced to die, certainly eternally here in judgment, but withholding that would be an act of mercy. So there's a little bit difference, a little bit of a difference in the way that they're defined. And, you know, we may overlap them a little bit in our study, but primarily we're concerned with how it is, why it is that He gives us what we don't deserve. So let's talk about the definition of grace. And to do this, that we have some common expressions on the board. These are very, very common expressions. We're going to go through each of these. Unmerited favor. You know, other people say it's grace is blessings bestowed when wrath is owed. And then there's God's riches at Christ's expense. And if you actually look at the first letter in each of the words, what's that spell? Grace. That's an acronymic way people have come up with. They're trying to remember grace. But let's look at each of these. We probably have all heard, maybe even used the expression before, right? Unmerited favor. If you say that, do you add to it or do you say it slightly different? How do you say it normally? What is it? Yeah, I hear sometimes people say undeserved unmerited favor because that's essentially what it is. In this line of definition, any other definitions that you can think of that we could add to this? That would be a good way of defining grace. Undeserved, unmerited favor. Anything else? Yeah, unearned favor, unmerited favor. Anything else? So what is this? What's the emphasis here? If someone says it's unmerited favor, what's the key? Kind of what Rick was talking about. What's the key here? Okay, it's not something. When we're talking about the grace of God, we're talking about something that, from the human perspective, from human ability, from human power, in and of, you know, even from human intellect, it's not something that we don't generate it. It's not something that we originated. It doesn't come from us. It comes from outside us. It is beyond us. It has to be given to us. And even then, it's something that we do not merit. It's not something that we could ever work enough to get. It's not something like that. So Ephesians 2 is really great at this. Let's look at verses 8 and 9. In fact, would someone read verse 8 and verse 9, those two verses? All right, so let's take a look at verse 8. You've been saved by grace through faith. And then he says, and then not of yourselves. Why is he saying that? What's he trying to remind us? Exactly right. Now there are people that sometimes, and putting ourselves in a first century setting, were there people in the first century when Paul was writing this, obviously for good reason, were there people dabbling with that idea? Where did that come out of? Yeah, so there were some folks in carry over the law of Moses. I mean, really the way they thought about the law was, I've done it. And they were doing what Joel was basically, you know, saying was, look what I did, God. I expect to be paid now because I've done enough. And Paul is saying, you can never do enough. There's not anything that you can do in and of itself that's going to cause God to be in debt to you. You can't do it. It is not of ourselves. And then He follows that by saying, it is the gift of God. So there's an illustration that he puts in that. Hopefully, over the weeks to come, we can expand that idea of, you know, what it is to give, and illustrate that a little bit. And then he says, not of works, lest anyone should boast. What's his point there? What's he saying? Not of works. Yeah, that's exactly right. I did it. I've accomplished it. Look what I've done. And he said it's not that way. Now, is there a difference in types of works in the Bible? Are some works required for salvation? Some are not, though. And so one of the things we'll talk about is grace and works. We need to spend probably a week talking about that, because the Bible does make a difference in certain kind of works. Remember, James 2 tells us, you see then how that by works a man is justified and not by faith only. So there's clearly a different kind of work involved in James 2 than right here in Ephesians 2. So there's a difference there. But like Gloria's saying, if there was like a punch list that at the end of that, he owed it to me at the end of that, I could say, boy, I put God in his place and he really owed it to me. And it can never be that way. Going back to verse 8, it's a gift. Otherwise, it destroys the nature of the fact of God giving us something that we don't deserve, and we can never lose sight of that. So it's unmerited favor. Blessings bestowed when wrath is owed. What in the world does that mean? What's the real emphasis of that definition of grace? Okay, all sin comes short of the glory of God, Terry. Oh, probably pretty well the same thing. Yes. Exactly. Yes, and so that really gets to the heart of grace, the very definition of grace, that in spite of the awful things that we've done, he's willing to give something to us that we don't deserve. Here we go, Ephesians 2, verse 1. And you he made alive who were what? Dead in trespasses and sins. What's that mean? We're lost. Sin. And then he says, in which you once walked according to the course of the world. In this state, God is not our master. The world is our master. Satan is our master. And yet, in spite of being, you know, dead in trespasses and sin, at the end of verse 2, sons of disobedience, in spite of being a disobedient rebel, what was God willing to do? Grant his blessings. That's grace. The blessings bestowed when wrath is owed. And so Ephesians 2 is a great passage to sort of give us sort of a multiple dimension of the definition of grace. And finally, I think this is it's a pretty neat, you know, use of the first letters of the letters of grace, God's riches at Christ's expense. What's the point of that definition? Yeah. 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 Oh, sure. Yeah. All of the favor that comes from God. And I think next week we're going to try to touch on that very idea next week about how much more it is. Yeah. Okay, and I think that's... When people give that definition, they say God's riches at Christ's expense. The real emphasis there is at Christ's expense. And is there any way to fully appreciate the depth and the riches of God's saving grace like we often sing? Is there any real way to do that until we understand what it was that guaranteed our salvation, that brought it to us? There's no way to do it unless we understand that Christ died on the cross for us. And here he is in Ephesians 2. How about verse 5? Even when we were dead in trespasses. So we're dead. We're not owed anything. He made us alive together with Christ. By grace you've been saved. So there's Jesus connected to grace. Verse 6, he raised us up together and made us sit together in heavenly places in Christ Jesus. There's Jesus mentioned again. And then if we drop down in verse 10, for his workmanship created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared before that we should walk in them. How about verse 13? But now in Christ Jesus, you were far off and made near by the blood of Christ. So he gets into the death of Jesus. Verse 14, he himself is our peace, who made both one, has broken down the middle of wall of division between us, having abolished in his flesh the enmity. Down in verse 16, he might reconcile them both to God in one body through the cross. So this whole chapter, he's been making us look back to the cross of Jesus Christ to understand what the grace of God is really all about. So when we're talking about grace next week, when we use the word grace, we're talking about an unmerited favor that gives heaven's blessings instead of wrath, brought to us at the expense of Christ's own death. And so when we define it that way, that's sort of a really full picture of the grace of God. So that's what we're going to be talking about for a while. Any thoughts on what we've discussed tonight, just by way of introduction? Any thoughts on that? Yeah, Tom? Okay. Yeah, I think that's a good analogy. He bridges the gap between God and man, and he makes possible the access to God, which we never could do on our own. There's nothing, no matter how good you are, you're going to be never beyond the 90%, so to speak. And I think it's a good analogy. Yeah. He connects. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. That's a good analogy. So that's what we're going to be talking about. Now, next week, we're discussing the notes you've got tonight. So take some time. Sit down. It should, you know, it doesn't have to take long. Do a few minutes a day, or you know, hopefully this is a study you're going to enjoy, and I'm going to enjoy it too. It doesn't have to be laborious. It's not like I'm grading your homework, but this is hopefully for us to come back and have great discussion on this. And if you have a chance to think about it and look at it, you may be able to think of something that nobody else can think of about that passage. And so let's put our heads together. Let's really try to understand God's grace. And there is no way that we're not going to be better people as a result of that. We're going to be better off in the end having studied this. So, great suggestion. Hopefully it's a great study. Thank you for your input tonight. And we'll start these notes next week and have some new ones out for the week after that. Thank you. Appreciate it.